Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We're doing tight end landscape here, pre-trade deadline edition. So we're going to look at all, some of the relevant, not every single one. I think they can, a lot of them can sort of, let's look at some of the high leverage ones, right? I don't need to go through every one. Let's look at the high leverage ones. So we're looking at basically our jumps. So looking from zero to one hit to two hit, trying to get ahead of the market a little bit and see where those guys can potentially be helping us now, I think is the combo, right? Where, hey, maybe we're ahead of the market in terms of where this guy might actually settle out, but at the same time, and sort of off-season cost, but at the same time, we're catching some of that value right now. That's a great combination, a different way to get a two-way out, or a two-way go, multiple outs. So guys that are going to go from zero to one hit, so Pitts, obviously, is a rookie. He's tight end 8 to date. He's 8th in points per game. I think he's going to be probably tight end 1, tight end 2 by the time that this offseason comes about. No real surprise there. That's about where he was last year. This is a good year. But again, if you went Kelce over him, right, if you went Kelce over Pitts this year, that is the difference between 20, basically 23, and I'm using two PPR scoring here, just because a lot of us play like these safe leagues formats where tight ends is even more of a premium, which is two PPR. Kelce 22.95, so basically 23 points per game. It's 15.6 points per game for Pitts. So if you sort of look at the difference there, between the two of them, you get almost a win, right? So that's 7.4 points, and you take that out towards, that's just about what our win number is, right? That's 103 points, which is about 103.7, which is about what a win, the marginal cost of a win is. So, I mean, you have to make that back. Again, and here's the thing, like, from a scoring perspective, I could sort of pick on Kelce a little bit, with some of the stuff with, you know, and say, hey, listen, you know, he's, some of the stuff with the, beating man coverage and there's been a little bit of regression in that, and I went through the whole thing with the Kansas City offense a couple weeks ago. That can be true. And at the same time, I mean, he's so far ahead of everyone in some of the scoring that he can come, he can be 85% of who he was and still be a top one or two option at the position. It's just such a massive difference. To give you an idea, the difference, in this scoring setting, basically the difference between him and tight end 2. So he is, again, if you round up, he's at 23 points, at 22.95. So we'll just round up to 23. Mark Andrews is second in terms of points per game at 20.6. So you look at the difference there, it's 2.4 points. The difference between after that, right? So the difference that covers the difference between tight end 2 and tight end 5. So again, that gets really steep up at the top. You sort of look in a little regression. If you just take 10% off of what Kelce is, right? If you just take his number times 10%, he is still, take 10% off of it, he's still tight end 1. So that is all to say, as a team building construct, again, I struggle a little bit with Kelce because I think the fall could come quicker, right? We don't see these guys perform at this elite, number 1 by 10 to 15% over the positions behind us. We don't see that all that often at 32 years old. It's just a rare feat. So I struggle with that a little bit. I think more of the principle is, like, if you look at this and you say, all right, Pitts, if you went Kelce over Pitts, right, you're already a win behind. And so, over the next couple of years, is Pitts a sure bet to replace Kelce? Not sure. Is Pitts a sure bet to outscore him? I'm not sure that's true, especially not next year. We'll see going forward after that. But even if, like, let's assume, Kelce gets a win on Pitts now, Pitts and Kelce play to a draw next year, or close to a draw, Yeah. Then Pitts has got to basically, in year three and beyond, he's got to make up a win difference in Kelsey. Can he do that? Yeah. The question is where do you want to allocate those resources? Right? Do you want to allocate it early in the time span or late? You know, do you want to build in year for the advantage in year three or in year one? That's basically what it turns out to be. I think it's a good example of it. And you get where it's essentially a win, so the math really works out for the analogy. So that's good. So he's actually 12% under expectation. Again, so that's when you look at that and you could say, all right, hey, this is a pretty good, you know, he's basically the tight end 5-6 range at the position. You feel pretty comfortable there. You're looking at guys, you know, if you give him that little bit more juice, he's tight end 8 presently in overall points. You know, when you give him that little bit more juice, he jumps up just, you know, a little bit more. And again, the points per game stuff, some of the guys that are better than him if produced in points per game have missed some time. Kittle, right, Gronkowski, those guys have missed some time. So Pitts is interesting. And again, if he doesn't unlock, you know, what'll get interesting is if Kelsey does this again, and then you've seeded 2 wins. You know, that's the thing with, I can understand with a tight end like Pitts, you think you're getting long-term elite upside. You may, but it also may take some time to actually get there, and you may hemorrhage at a first round or an early second round startup pick valuation. You're getting in a situation like Lawrence where it's really not helping you. So that's an interesting thing with him. Again, it's probably not something that's super consequential. I will pass on him at tight end 1, and I'll take, you know, Andrews, or I'll take Hockenson, right? I'll probably, that spot where I would take Pitts is probably going to be where I'd take a quarterback. So, and then I think I could throw a lot of, especially in tight end premium, I can throw a lot of assets at the position in a variety of different ways to sort of maximize my production there. But I probably won't be targeting Pitts. He's a good player. I probably won't be targeting him there just for a variety of roster construct questions. I'd rather go quarterback. I think the quarterbacks in that range are probably safer. And that's pretty much it. So, but again, if you're moving up the position, it's tough to move to him, right? He's just probably not a guy I'm going to have just a ton of. Dawson Knox, tight end 32 coming into the season. He's 11th in terms of year-to-date scoring, 6th in terms of points per game. Did miss some time there with that hand injury. So that is, he's back now, so that's good. 31% over expectations. So this is a little touchdown trappy, fluky-ish. So that gives me a little bit of pause with him. And I think if you sort of look at it, this is one of the places where you can get, you know, one-hit wonders to come from. A little bit of a later breakout. Not a super productive guy coming in. That said, good offense. Not a ton of... There's not like a ton of things going on with this offense that we just sort of strip his ability to do this. You know, you don't have a ton of volume at the running back position in terms of routes and targets and all that stuff. Like you're looking bottom 5 at the position. You've got an alpha 1 on the outside, but you've got some role players essentially spread throughout the rest of the offense. Not the worst way to build an offense, but it definitely leaves open, like, this is a really good, and if you believe in Josh Allen, like, this is a really good setup for a guy like Dawson Knox. So he's averaging 15.5 points per game in safe league scoring. So that's, again, that's pretty good. You're looking, you know, in the running back 1 range of the position with his scoring. I think with Knox, it'll be interesting his cost next year. You look at guys of this position last year that sort of came up. Again, I think it's he's a younger comparable Tanyan and Logan Thomas, who ended up being, you know, on that tight end 1, tight end 2 fringe. So that's been an interesting spot for him in terms of where he ultimately falls. Again, I think you probably need to see a little bit more of him at this particular point to get him all the way there. That would sort of be my one thing with him, is like, we've seen it in small samples with him, and he's sort of doing it on high touchdown variance. So give me a full sample with it not on totally high touchdown variance, and then we can be in a better situation, I think, to feel good about that. When you look at where he is in terms of some of the November ADP, he's in that tight end 12 range, like similar guys in there. It's names that we should think, I think, broadly similar. Dalton Schultz, Dawson Knox, Logan Thomas, Tyler Higbee's in that range. Hunter Henry's in that range. It seems like a value situation. I'll be sort of looking at that's an interesting spot. That was where Tanyan was last year. Those guys are appropriate. So that would sort of be the thought process that I have on it. I think I'd probably pass on him there until we get some more uptick. I don't see with a cost of Dawson Knox at this point at tight end, like 10, 11, 12, sort of in that range. Those guys are really close together. I don't see, you know, Freiermuth is at 10. So Freiermuth's at 10, Schultz is at 11, Knox is at 12. I'd have Freiermuth ahead of those guys. It seems like a hard ceiling type of situation. And so how does he, you know, what in his range of outcomes is possible that he can do that would sort of crack into the Gesicki, Fant, Goddard, Hockenson, Andrews, Kittle, Waller, Kelsey, Pitts ranges of position? And I don't think there is anything. So if you're in that situation, don't buy that, because it's all floor after that. It's all you know, risk after that. You don't have a ton of, you know, this isn't a spot where if he goes off for two touchdowns and you know, 140 yards on Monday Night Football, he's going to jump up six spots to position. He's probably hard capped at where he is. So that would sort of be my other thing with him, is you don't have some of the value outs, I think, that you might have with some of the other guys. For example, like a Hunter Henry, he could go up several rounds of value. You sort of look at that. I think that's be something I'd rather wait a little bit and take a Hunter Henry than I would sit there and take Dawson Knox at like tight end 12. So arbing those two, you know, we'll see. But it'd be a big jump. I mean, it'd be a 20-spot jump in terms of draft position for Knox. Good on him having a good season and ultimately maybe putting it together. 31% over expectation gives me a little pause. We'll see where he gets at the end of the season. All right, now we're jumping up from one hit to two hits. So some names here. I did mention Dalton Schultz. He's in that tight end 10, 11, 12 range. That's basically a tier. Essentially, Higbee and Logan Thomas, and Hunter Henry, Irv Smith, Ingram, Cole Kmet are sort of in a tier after that. So if you think about the way it's structured right now, I'm using DLF's ADP because it's the least of all the evils in season. You have you've got Pitts, and then you've got basically Kelsey, Waller, Kittle, Andrews, and then there's like a semi-split between Andrews and Hockenson, about a half a round, which is probably not enough. And then there's another half round gap between, or another basically a round and a half gap between Hockenson and Goddard, where Goddard is in there with Fant and Gesicki. So that's kind of how it's broken out. So it's Pitts, break, Kelsey, Waller, Kittle, Andrews, semi-break, Hockenson, big break, Goddard, Fant, and Gesicki. I'll say this. I think vis-a-vis all of these guys, Andrews is probably the best situated in terms of tight end five. You could make an argument for him over Waller and Kittle. He's, you know, 4 years younger than Waller. I think you could make that argument if you wanted. He's producing like that right now. So he's outproducing. This isn't a stretch argument. We've got some proof of concept of that. And then Hockenson's interesting. Goddard's interesting too, because he's basically been valued above what he's produced his entire career. And then you look at like Gesicki at that, in the flip side of that argument, seems like he's undervalued. Right, he seems like he's basically outproduced Goddard and Fant his entire career and is ranked worse than him, which is interesting. So again, I'm not sure how much arbing there is to be done, because they're pretty close in valuation, but I'd be interested to explore. You know, I like Hockenson ahead of Gesicki just in terms of some of the insulation stuff as well. I'd be interested to see sort of what that looks like in terms of the spread of the cost later on in the off, you know, getting into the off season. Especially considering the fact that Gesicki is a free agent. I think he's probably going to get tagged at the minimum, so he'll be back there. But you would like to see a longer-term deal. Over the cap has him worth just short of $3.5 million. Excuse me, just short of $9.5 million of valuation. He's making a guaranteed a base salary this year of $1.3 million. So he's due for a big raise. So we'll see how that unfolds. Some of the other guys that are in that range, again, Schultz, 11% over expectation, but him producing in that tight end one range, absolutely possible. I think, I'm not going to use the word probable, but if he sort of gave me between 10 and 20 on his production, I feel very comfortable betting that, going forward. So, and that's certainly valuable. That's 15.5 points per game in safe leagues. Again, that's on your running back flex type centric space there. Mentioned Hockenson before. He's 3% under expectation, so I do think there's more for him to go. That's not my reason why. I think that he's on pace for he's got 54 catches through 10 games, right? So I just think that offense, I think he has more to offer. And when you look at it too, I mean, I've talked about this in prior shows. When you actually look at his data, some of his production is backslid and it's totally touchdown related. But in reality, like, his yards per route run data is up. So that's interesting. He's on pace for 91 catches, 92 catches if you round up. It's pretty good. That's a pretty good showing. And, on just short of 1,000 yards, if he does that, we're in a really high-end situation. Again, if they improve quarterback, they improve some of their other offensive stuff. I think if their offense goes from being, one of the worst to, 25th or 20th, right, that'd be a big jump for Hockenson. He's probably not an alpha one in the sense of Waller, Kelsey, or maybe even Mark Andrews, no offense to Marquise Brown, but he's probably the next tier after that you could pair with a one, and I think that would be a little bit more interesting there for him. Maybe that's what we're seeing, but again, he's been very productive on a route run basis, so I'm not knocking him. I just think it's a crummy situation total. Fant, year to date, he's 10th. He's 10 points per game, again making that jump from one to two hits. So to eliminate some of the risk of the one-hit wonder, wasn't super worried about it with him. I do worry about I think he's a little bit more of a capped upside guy. So that's part of my concern there with him. The quarterback situation, will they ever get it figured out? We'll see. They sign Sutton. They sign Tim Patrick to extensions worth $90-plus million this week. We'll see what that signals to what they're going to do in the offseason about the quarterback. Different people have speculated. We'll see there. The good thing is he's right at expectation too. So you have room for him to grow. I think he's a better player probably than this, but that's where we're at right now with his scoring. Goddard, 12th year to date, 14th in points per game, 20% over expectation. He's one that he flummoxes me for a lot of reasons. And one of them is just a lack of usage. It's a little baffling. In terms of that they don't get him fully involved, when you look at especially early on where his ranks in terms of some of the snaps and route shares and stuff like that ranked, it was pretty low earlier on in the season. For example, this week he's 27. I'm just using this week. He's 27 routes. That ranks 14th at the position. Not super helpful in terms of, even though he's smashing in terms of north of 2 yards per route run on those routes, it's just not a high end ceiling type of situation. So gives me a little bit of concern with him. Again, if we're sort of picking in that range of the guys that we mentioned, I would probably take Fant and Gesicki over Goddard, assuming Gesicki gets extended. If Gesicki gets extended, I don't see really the argument for him not being tight end 7, be sort of what I would say behind Hockenson and Andrews. So Gesicki goes from zero top 6 hits to 1. So again, that's a big jump. He's got multiple hits on his resume. We kind of know what he is, right? And there's some limitations in terms of some of his play style. I'm not super worried about that long term. So those are the really big things that I would look for. Again, some other ones that I think are pseudo interesting, or I don't know if we get all the way home to them being big time difference makers, but This Irv Smith ahead of Tyler Conklin thing feels very much the same way Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz felt. You know, Conklin basically has been productive now for two seasons in which Irv Smith has missed time, and all of a sudden we're tanking his cost. So that's one thing I think that's quizzical to me in terms of where we're at. Again, this is stale data, so we'll have to see where it ultimately comes out once we get some more actionable stuff here for the December ADP here coming forward that maybe reflects a little bit more of Conklin's impact. But again, in this range, I do think pivoting from like running back to some tight ends, especially in that maybe the Goddard, Fant, Gesicki range, if you're adding additional assets in there, I think that stuff is really interesting and compelling because you can, if you're playing tight end premium, you can backfill a lot of that running back production and you're adding in with the tight end and you're adding in an additional asset. I think it's an interesting, sneaky way to pivot. I've got a spot where I've got to address wide receiver, and I'm thinking of dangling out Swift in a deal and seeing if I can get Swift and a high-end, get like a DK Metcalf type and a high-end tight end involved in that deal and sort of use that that sort of under-the-radar safe league's edge to get myself just an additional shot in the arm. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of the Analytics of Dynasty podcast, the tight end market overview. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We will talk again very soon.